I'm Cherry Gregg, and this is a Studio 2 Extra. Today, we're diving deep into the mystery of family ambition with New York Times Magazine staff writer Susan Dominus. Her new book, The Family Dynamic, A Journey into the Mystery of Sibling Success, profiles families with multiple high-achieving kids, from Olympic athletes to award-winning novelists. It poses the questions about what's really driving their success. Is it parenting? Is it birth order? Or could it be siblings? I started by asking her to share the story that opened the door to her fascination with high-achieving families. I want to start at the dinner table from your childhood. You describe bursting into tears when asked to solve a math problem over dinner at a friend's house. I want to talk about that early experience and how it shaped your fascination with how different families cultivate or avoid pressure around achievement. I want you to talk about that.
Well, when I was a kid growing up, my parents basically, you know, the one rule at our dinner table was that you had to chew with your mouth closed. And beyond that, there were not a lot of expectations. But my parents had these really close friends, and I would stay with them when my parents traveled. And in the middle of dinner, the father would turn to one of his kids and give him this elaborate math problem that the child was expected to solve in his head, or they discussed current events. And I thought this was all the greatest thing until the father turned to me and asked me to solve one of those math problems. And my mind went completely blank. I mean, I didn't even know where to begin, you know, and I just burst into tears. And on the one hand, I was really relieved when I went home, you know, but also I think I was realizing, oh, are there things that parents are doing to try to make their kids better in school, like more successful? And part of me, I was a pretty like freakishly ambitious little kid. I had to get all A's. I don't know why, just how I was wired. I was a little bit like, well, what if my parents were pushing me to be better in math? And maybe I'd be have more to say about politics if, you know, we were discussing current events every night. And I always wondered, if you have a family like that, is it really exciting and does it make you bold and confident, or are you like crushed under the expectations of your family history?
Yeah. And so you kind of became fascinated with how different people are raised. And
exactly.
And it's just sort of how that breeds success. And the thing that hooked me on your writing was your recent article that came out in May in the New York Times titled "The Surprising Ways That Siblings Shape Our Lives." And I want you to sort of tell us about that article, because it kind of explains that if your parents gave you your name, your siblings may have given you your identity and driven you to become a thing. And your sibling, your brother, actually had a huge influence on why you're even a journalist.
It's really true. I mean, I'll start with just by telling my own story, which was that I was 14 years old and I was really into like track and piano, but I wasn't particularly good at either one of them. And my brother, who's 6 years older, came home from college one day and said, you know, I think you should really join the high school newspaper. And I told him that we didn't have one. It had been disbanded. And my brother just basically bullied me into starting our high school newspaper. He made me feel like a coward and, you know, anti-democracy if I didn't go, you know, start this newspaper. And it was weird because as soon as I started doing it and like those first articles started trickling in, I was like, forget piano, forget track. Like, this is where I belong. And he sort of knew, you know, in a way that parents don't always, he knew me. And he also knew like what a high school was supposed to look like. And one of the things a high school is supposed to have is a high school newspaper. So I just think my parents weren't thinking about those things. And I think even if they had suggested it, I would have been a little bit less open to the suggestion than I was to the suggestion coming from my older brother.
Yeah. And so I wanted to talk about that research because, you know, there hasn't been a lot of talk. There always talks about how parents influence kids, but you don't see a lot of talk or a lot of research or data around how siblings actually influence each other. What did you find in digging through what currently exists?
Well, for one thing, we find that young people are more likely to take advice from somebody who they think understands them and understands the task at hand. And more often than not, that's like a friend or a sibling than it is a parent. But we also found that there are sibling spillover effects, so that we know that when a sibling does better in school, the other siblings also tend to do better. And for a while, people were like, well, maybe that's just because of the way they're being parented by the same parents. But this really interesting researcher looked at a study that found that when kids have this sort of lucky break, they're old for their age in their grade just because of when their birthday falls, their other siblings, their younger siblings, tend to do better. Those kids do better in school, right? Because they're a little old for their age and they're developmentally farther along. Their younger siblings, regardless of when their own birthday falls, also do better. So they're kind of benefiting from the lucky break that the older sibling got. It spills over to them. And that's a way of proving, no, this is really a sibling thing that's happening here. It's not the parenting. It's not the way the parenting is coming down. It's something else. So that's super interesting.
Yeah, the other thing that stood out to me, you've interviewed a number of families in your book, The Family Dynamic, and that sort of plays out throughout those examples as well.
Yeah, I mean, so the book it tells the story in depth of six different families, and they're all a little bit idiosyncratic. But I think the one that you're thinking about right now is the Graf family, because Lauren Graf, Adam Graf, was the oldest of three siblings. He was very academic, very science, math kind of kid who went on to get his MD, PhD. And his younger sister, Lauren, was obsessed with books, and she went on to become an award-winning, best-selling author. And Lauren would say that because her brother was kind of a typical big brother and often made her feel not so great, she had this like burning kind of almost energy inside of her, this like anger that made her really want to prove herself to her brother. And then their youngest sibling, Sarah Groff, who's now Sarah True, thought that her older siblings were so academic that she could never really compete with them. And so she actually made a deliberate decision that she was going to throw herself into swimming because she just could tell her sister didn't care that much about it, and that her sister wasn't going to touch it. She could own it and she could excel in it and really distinguish herself there, and she did.
Yeah, and that's a pretty common trait with the youngest siblings sort of being as a trend standout when it comes to sports. Why do younger siblings, the baby of the family, tend to do that?
There are a couple of different reasons, and some of it is that they obviously sometimes they play up, right? Because their older siblings are always kicking a ball around with them, let's say in the backyard, and they're used to playing tough with older kids. The parents can navigate the system a little bit better because they've been through it once before. But also, there's something in that because academically, oldest siblings have the edge because they've gotten all this enrichment before the other kids were born. They had the benefit of being the sole beneficiaries of their parents' attention. So if they have the academic edge, what's a younger sibling to do? They're going to find something else to excel at. And often that thing is sports.
But the book sort of expands and it says, you know, siblings are very influential, but the biggest influencer still seems to be parents. But then there's a lot of other, you know, dynamics at play. And one of those things is birth order. This is something we've heard. And what does the research show there?
It turns out that the most recent best conducted studies don't find an effect of birth order on things like personality. Like, why does the oldest child seem to be the most conscientious? It's because the oldest child is the oldest child. And so that child might be the most conscientious at that moment in time. But the younger sibling, by the time they catch, an 18-year-old seems really conscientious, but the 14-year-old, 4 years later, let's say when they're 18, might even be more conscientious. So we have all these misperceptions. But there is something to be said about this idea that the oldest child, not only is the oldest child have the cognitive edge of all of their parents' attention, but then you start to see them doing a little bit of like teaching and instructing their younger siblings, even if it's like tying shoelaces or maybe multiplication tables. And that kind of builds confidence and it reinforces cognition and it's healthy. So there are all sorts of reasons. And then, maybe it does seem like oldest children do sort of achieve more, but it's not that they're more driven necessarily. It's just they have this academic edge that kind of has ripple effects that follow from there.
You talk about socioeconomic factors, and in your book, you distinguish between overcomers and thwarted parents. Can you walk us through those two archetypes and how they shape their kids differently?
I was really interested in how many of the parents, how many of the families I wrote about had parents who had extraordinary, gripping stories. I mean, even the Bronte sisters, who are thought of as like this consummately English trio. In fact, their father, Patrick Bronte, was an immigrant. He was an Irish immigrant who had grown up dirt poor. His parents probably didn't even read, but he was so bright and so industrious that he ended up with a scholarship to Cambridge. This was like a real leap for him. You know what I mean? And so, or like the Hollifields, for example. Their father grew up in Mississippi. There was no high school for black kids in Mississippi at the time. So at age 14, he left home. We don't even know how he got himself to Tuskegee, Alabama, so he could get a high school degree. So he had, was so independent, so driven to get an education. His kids kind of saw that, I think, and really were inspired by that and felt like if he could do that to get an education, the least they could do was get good grades by, at the school they attended. The thwarted parent is the parent who had some driving ambition, like a guy named Lawrence Paulus, who was a director in Tokyo during World War II and had these, directed these huge productions for American soldiers. And when he got home to the United States, his career never really took off in theater the same way. But his daughter, Diane Paulus, became one of the most innovative and lauded female directors in American theater history. So, you could think of it as a child who's being motivated somehow indirectly by a thwarted parent. But I also like this term that my friend coined, which is the finishing child. Like it's the child who finishes a dream that the parent had but didn't have the resources or the right timing to execute.
Yeah, that's such a it's so fascinating and interesting to me. But I think there's a tough question at the heart of it. Is intense parenting, the pushing, the planning, the demanding, is that a gift or a burden? And is there a line between motivation and causing damage to the actual child?
I think the parents, the thing that I have come to really feel is that parents have to know their children. And you can set expectations as high, you can go ahead and set expectations as high as you want. But if your child is not capable of reaching those expectations in math, let's say, then you're really setting your child up for disappointment and you're setting yourself up for kind of a toxic relationship. Because we know that when expectations are set too high, it can be demotivating and it can really lead to anxiety and depression, and like what parent wants to be responsible for that? So, I like to think of parents as sure motivate your kids, but like find a coach who can do that, or find a great dance instructor, or find a t try to get your kid in the class with a teacher who you think is going to hold your kid to a certain standard and really support that child. Let your home be a safe place, like be a retreat.
I was also struck by your finding that low-income families often invest more in the kid who shows the most talent, while wealthier families often spend more money to lift up the weaker child. What do you think this tells us about how resources can shape sibling dynamics and sibling outcomes?
I mean, really, so much of what affects kids' likelihood of success boils down to economics. Like, were they able to go to college or not? We know that for, at least until recently, it's been a given that a college education is what guarantees you the strongest income and like even, more likelihood of staying married, all kinds of health outcomes. And so, that's the way that parents have the biggest effect on their kids is can they send them to college or not? But yeah, I think there's all sorts of ways that family dynamics play out differently depending on what their financial status is. So in disadvantaged families, sibling effects, spillover effects, other kinds of things are stronger because the kids spend more time together because the parents are busy working or the kids aren't like spending all their time at tennis lessons. They're home together hanging out, and so they really affect each other more. Even something like this idea that the oldest child is always has the cognitive edge in families where English is a second language, that's not true, right? Because the second kid is the one who benefits from the older siblings speaking English and is a little bit more integrated into the school systems. So I think that one thing we're realizing increasingly is that whatever we learn about siblings, it's going to be inflected by the socioeconomic status of the siblings we're studying.
And you wrote that parenting choices, the ones we obsess over, may not matter as much as we think. So what do you think really matters when you're talking about, growing and raising, high achievers?
Well, I do believe that a sense of optimism really matters. And to me, the perfect balance is a family where the message is you can dream big. Like, you want to reach for the moon. We think the moon is there for you, and we'll help you, and we'll support you. And you should believe in yourself. But by the way, if you don't want to reach for the moon, that's also okay. Not everybody has to reach for the moon, Let somebody else reach for the moon if you want. That's fine.
You also write about curiosity and openness as essential tools. And why do you believe those traits might matter more than just IQ or even test scores?
It's this idea. I think partly curiosity is a key, not just to enjoying, not just to succeeding in school. Like curious kids like learning. So
Yeah.
if we can foster curiosity, then the desire to learn becomes a little bit intrinsic, as opposed to just like forcing kids to buckle down and work, 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 and study more. So I think it's about creating the love of learnings qualities, but it's also about just I think joie de vivre, like people who are curious, people who are open to experience. They want a little bit of everything the world has to offer, and you want your kids to partake of all of that, of music, of art, of culture, whatever kind of music it is, whatever art it is. You want them to feel that and experience that, travel, that kind of thing.
Yeah. And you mentioned luck in the book. Like, luck is a chunk of the success as well. Do you feel differently now about how you're raising your own kids? Was there something that surprised you in doing this research when you reflect on how you brought your own children up?
I was really surprised by a lot of research that does find that, like, the parenting decisions that we agonize over, like whether to co-sleep or whether to be really strict about homework, about, or whether to like have a job wheel, these things actually don't turn out to have as much of an effect as we think that they do. The story that stuck with me the most, I don't think I even put it in the book, but if you wanted to ask me what I do the most that came directly from my research, Marilyn Hollifield played piano beautifully when she was a girl. And one of her fondest memories was of having her mother just come sit in the room and listen to her play. And she never gave her feedback. She never said, "Oh, you're out of tune," or "It's too fast." She just listened and enjoyed, and Marilyn felt that enjoyment. My own son play One of my two sons plays piano now, and I really do love to just go in there and sit there and enjoy it. And I don't feel like it's my job to correct him, and it takes the pressure off of me, and I know it takes the pressure off of him, and I think we both just really enjoy that.
Hey, brother, there's an endless road to
That was New York Times staff writer
rediscover.
Susan Dominis. Her new book, The Family Dynamic: A Journey into the Mystery of Sibling Success, was released this month. I'm Cherry Gregg, and this has been a Studio 2 Extra. You can listen to Studio 2 live Mondays through Thursdays at noon on WHYY 90.9 FM and streaming on Facebook and YouTube. Our show is produced by Debbie Builder, Paige Murray-Bessler, and Andreas Copes. Al Banks engineered today's Studio 2 Extra. From WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Cherry Gregg. Thanks for listening.
Hey, sister, do you still believe in love, I wonder?